For 2 years, Russian President Vladimir Putin has invoked religion to justify his war in Ukraine. Now the leader of the Russian Orthodox Church has made it official. He's declared the Ukraine conflict, quote, a holy war. But could this prolong and deepen the conflict? Professor Victoria Smolkin specialises in Russian politics and religion at Wesleyan University in the US.
I think the reason it made such an impact is because of the moment at which it is coming in our current political landscape. The fact that he is speaking of the so-called collective West as a satanic entity in a moment when the future of the conflict itself is in question, and there's a lot of ambiguity about which course the West is going to take and how far Russia is willing to go, it's the timing of it that's relevant, because actually much of what he had said in that declaration, he had said already before several times. Mm.
You mentioned there his reference to the satanic West. These have become quite commonplace. What does he mean? What is satanic about the West as far as Patriarch Kirill is concerned?
The terms are meant to evoke certain emotions rather than to convey certain meanings in some way that can be traced. So terms like globalism, Satanism, the collective West, NATO, right? All of these come as a kind of package. And that package is an existential threat to Russian sovereignty, and not just Russian's political sovereignty, but more importantly in this context, what they refer to as spiritual sovereignty. So the satanic aspect is the fact that the West comes with a certain package of values, and that those values are declared anathema to the Russian world and to the civilizational model that the church puts forward and that the state embraces. Of course, if you are putting forward a certain civilizational model as holy, then the opposing civilizational model will therefore be satanic. So there is nothing that they're saying that is clearly pointing to Satanism, right? Or in any kind of concrete sense. Really, it's a marker of absolute evil, right? Yeah. That is what it's supposed to communicate in quite general terms, but deliberately general in order to invoke a certain emotional response.
Yeah. Here are his words, or the words in this document, from the spiritual and moral point of view, the special military operation, which is the euphemism for the war, the special military operation is a holy war in which Russia and its people are defending the single spiritual space of holy Russia. How useful is that to Putin?
It's tremendously useful. The aspect to focus on in terms of its political use to Putin is something that he develops actually in that statement in more detail later on, which is this idea that there is something fundamentally wrong about a Russia that in its current political borders, that the current political borders of Russia are incomplete, and that there is a greater Russia, a Russian world, that has to be reunified, right, or reconstituted in order for Russian sovereignty, true Russian sovereignty, to be defended. What is expressed is actually a defensive posture, which is paradoxical in a country that's conducting an offensive war. The way that it's expressed is something is being defended, right? And the thing that is being defended is this idea of an incomplete Russia that has lost its unity. And the unity is with, first of all, the kind of East Slavic nations, right? So Belarus, Ukraine, and Russia, which, you know, have some kind of organic relationship with one another and have been artificially separated from one another, in particular Ukraine, which has been corrupted through its associations with the satanic West and liberalism and so on. And so the holy war is a reconstitution of that civilizational unity and spiritual sovereignty.
I'm also thinking, though, Victoria, given that, you know, as much as we can ascertain, there is some disaffection, a modicum of disaffection with the war inside Russia, does the reference to a spiritual and moral war somehow convince the Russian people that their sacrifice is worth it, that it's in a larger cause invoking these kind of terms?
Absolutely. For any kind of military conflict, for it to be meaningful and ultimately successful, it can't be a purely mercenary affair. So in this case, the war, the so-called special military operation, the issue with it is it never had clear military objectives that were articulated. It was supposed to be carried out. It was supposed to take Kyiv in 3 days. And then following that, it was supposed to somehow kind of control over Ukraine and somehow destroy this anti-Russian version of Ukraine. Putting this in a religious or spiritual language gives it a meaning and a justification that it would not have if it was purely a conversation about a land grab. And they actually make it very explicit, beginning with the occupation of Crimea. At various points, Putin would say, this is not about land. We have enough land. We have enough resources. This is about claiming this land, which is spiritually and historically meaningful to us.
It's fascinating because a few years ago, you wrote a very well-regarded book. It's called A Sacred Space is Never Empty. It's actually about the sort of political use of atheism in the old Soviet world. Russia, despite its identity as a Russian Orthodox country, actually has very low levels of religious observance. Why would this language cut through with the average Russian, though?
The best way to think about it is that the Russian Orthodox Church is playing an ideological rather than a religious role in Russia today. So I actually end my book on this paradoxical note that it's actually the Soviet Communist Party that brings religion back into public life at the end of the Soviet period in 1988, which would be surprising in a country that professed a commitment to atheism. Given that, at a certain point, the Soviet state realized that it actually had more use for religion than atheism, which had become politically and ideologically useless socially. So the church comes in to play that ideological role already in 1988. It's later articulated actually as the so-called second baptism of Rus, because they're referring to 1988 was the millennium of the original baptism of Rus from 988. And they see that return of religion, of Russian Orthodoxy, back into public life as the second baptism of Rus, a kind of regeneration of the nation. From that perspective, religious observance is not the point. The point is an affiliation and a political affinity and identity with the ideological project of Russian Orthodoxy.
I see that Willie Fautre, I think it is, of the group Human Rights Without Borders, has told Newsweek that if he had chosen to, Patriarch Kirill is probably the one person who had the ability to stop Putin making war on Ukraine. Do you think that's true? Could Kirill have prevailed on Putin to either stop the war or to at least temper it dramatically?
I think that the question is wrong in principle. The part of what works so well in the relationship between the church and the state and between Putin and Kirill as individuals is that they actually have an affinity and shared goals. There is no reason that one should have ever expected that Kirill would have in any shape or form tried to convince Putin to step away from this. The second point is that ultimately, I think one of the questions that people have when they look at the church in Russia today is who's leading and who's following. Is the church ultimately following the state, the political program, or is the political program, the state, following this kind of ideological, religious manifesto and mission? The best way to think about it is that they are working towards one another. The church presents itself as essential to the very meaning of the state, that it is foundational. At the same time, the church really exists at the will of the state. It does not have autonomous power, political weight. So I don't see how, given its lack of autonomy and given its shared interests with the Russian political project, there would be any reason for Kirill to either want to or have the power to turn Putin in a different direction.
Which makes it interesting to read these references to Kirill and his support for the war in Ukraine as making him, quote, the grave digger of the Russian Orthodox Church. I notice also that Pope Francis, who has tried to be a peacemaker and have ties with the Russian Orthodox Church, he has said to Kirill, do not become Putin's altar boy. I get the impression from your comments that this doesn't matter to Kirill.
I don't think that the comment of being Putin's altar boy is something that is at all significant to the Russian Orthodox Church inside Russia. They can easily discount any assessment of its function or meaning from the West as illegitimate. You know, the fact that this is coming from a Western church, right, from the Pope or anyone else, is, of course, they would say that, right? There's no reason to take seriously any of the things that are said as criticisms of the church or the state. In terms of being the gravedigger of the Russian Orthodox Church, there it's more interesting and more complicated, because the question is, first of all, what do we mean when we say the Russian Orthodox Church? There are actually numerous Russian Orthodox churches, including churches abroad, the Russian Orthodox Church of America, and so on.
Mm. And a lot of those have broken away, haven't they? Or at least a few of those have tried to cut ties with Moscow.
If not formally cut ties, certainly dissent on this issue.
Yeah.
Certainly they're keeping a long distance from the war. And many of them are taking a very active stance against the war. So from that perspective, the Russian Orthodox Church of the Moscow Patriarchate specifically is quite isolated. At the same time, it's hard to see how Kirill's support of the state would in effect be tantamount to digging the grave of the church, because it can only strengthen the church to work in symphony and in concert with the state and its objectives. If you mean Russian Orthodoxy as a faith and as a kind of theological position that has fundamentally compromised itself and become morally bankrupt, yes, from that perspective, I think many believers, true believers, have turned away from the Moscow Patriarchate for exactly this reason. But the church as an institution inside Russia is quite protected and really flourishing. So I'm not sure that its support of the war really will impact that standing in any way at all.
Victoria Smolkin of Wesleyan University, her most recent book about Russian religion is A Sacred Space is Never Empty. And that's it for this episode. You can follow us at the ABC Listen app. A big thanks to Hong Jiang and John Jacobs. I'm Andrew West. Join us again for the Religion and Ethics Report.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.